This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Your flying eggs are pretty impressive, Mr. Eggman. But let's face it, you'll never catch me.
Confidence. A fool's substitute for intelligence.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinematic Animalia, the podcast where we break down the biology of movie monsters. Today, we're going to have a look at the physiology of speed, me having just seen the Sonic film. As always, there's a few different segments to the show. We'll have time codes below so you can skip ahead to the bits you're looking for. Before we start, my name's Sam Perrin. I'm a freshwater ecologist at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, writing my thesis there. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses, alongside co-host number one, Adam Harsick, who is not with us today. He's a disease ecologist at the University of Arkansas. We're your movie ecologists, and this week, our co-host who will be doing most of the heavy lifting is Dave, who's a vet and our movie physiologist. Oh, how's it going?
Good, yourself?
Rubbish.
Yeah, you're still sick.
We were just saying I've been sick all week. The tail end of Norwegian winter is always fairly harsh. But I had a guest spot on the Kaiju Weekly podcast yesterday with Travis Alexander and Michael Hamilton. We had a look at the Tremors films, kind of a repeat of what we already did back in our first season. This was Tremors 1 and 2, though, as opposed to us, because we just covered Tremors 1 in our first season.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just decided that the Shriekers were just too much of a nightmare. Like,
yeah.
That's the annoying thing. Like, Trav put this question to me. He was like, you know, this is one of the most original or interesting life histories that you get in a sci-fi movie. How, you know, plausible is it? There's no good answer.
No.
Like, it's just, you have a species that, you know, kind of morphs from a graboid into the Shrieker, but then the Shriekers can give birth to other Shriekers. It's very weird.
Yeah.
But it is fun, I will admit. Oh, it is, yeah. Kind of, you know, it's like the Xenomorph lifestyle. It's different and it's quirky, but yes. And that episode should be up soon, so go check it out. It's Kaiju Weekly. They focus on a different movie monster every week. The week before I was on, they did the Giant Claw.
Comes from outer space. From some godforsaken antimatter galaxy, millions and millions of light years from the Earth.
You know, Sonic's out at the movies at the moment. It's doing pretty well.
So, Sam, do you want to give us a brief summary? Because probably the listeners do know who Sonic is, but a brief summary of sort of the movie in terms of where Sonic's from, what is his background in this film, as well as approximately what he looks like.
Yeah, so Sonic is he's a video game character going way, way back. I used to play Sonic racing games when I was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. And essentially, he's just this really fast little hedgehog. They've finally adapted it into a, you know, a major motion picture. The essence of the story in this is that Sonic was driven off his home planet by little things that look kind of the same as him. I'm not sure. They've got masks and costumes on. But they want his speed.
Oh, so he's unique.
I don't know if his physiology is unique, but his ability to go that fast is definitely unique.
Okay.
I think it's referred to as a superpower, essentially. So it's not just an adaptation of this species.
Okay.
And he is given a bag of rings, which can teleport him across the galaxy. He's on Earth. He wants to stay on Earth because his last remaining, you know, planet where people aren't already hunting for him is the Mushroom Kingdom, which is gross. Sonic essentially pretty much looks like he does in all the games. He's got a real big head on a very short, kind of skinny body. He really looks like he's about to, you know, kind of flip over at any second. He moves, they do a lot of that, you know, I'm moving so fast that everyone around me is still kind of stuff a couple of times. It's good. It's fun. Well, I'll talk about, you know, what I thought of the movie in a second.
Tall, blue, spiky hair, white gloves and red shoes.
He's got very humanoid feet and hands. They make a point in the movie a couple of times of him covering his tracks by stepping in other people's because he's got smaller shoes.
So he comes from our universe, just from a different aspect of it.
From a different side of the universe or something, yeah.
But speaks English.
Yes, he speaks English, yeah. And so does his owl. Guardian.
Oh my god.
I'm not sure if that's something from the video games. It seemed very strange.
That's Longclaw. She took care of me. She was basically Obi-Wan Kenobi. If Obi-Wan Kenobi had a beak and ate mice.
there was a lot of controversy when the first trailer initially dropped, because people really were freaked out by the Sonic design. I didn't really care either way when the first thing came out, but the redesign looks, it looks really good. Yeah. So, but anyway, look, in terms of the movie itself, I went and saw it last weekend with my kid. It's kind of fun. There is nothing wrong with it, really. It's not amazing, but yeah, it's just fun. Jim Carrey, he is fully committed to this thing. He's really put his best foot forward here, and he does a lot for the movie. And so, look, Sonic's kind of fun as well. He's a little, like, really pushing the line of being kind of annoying. My kid, if anybody's got, like, a 6-7-year-old kid, they're extremely loud and hyper most of the time. And even he turned to me at one point in the movie and said, Sonic's kind of irritating. So, you know, he does push that line a couple of times, but, you know, it's a fun movie. If you've got kids, take them to see it.
Will you take us to Mount Splashmore?
No! If I take you, will you two shut up and quit bugging me?
Yeah, of course.
But the main reason, like, the main thing we want to do today is just talk about the physiology of speed. Like, how species get up to, you know, these kind of rates of movement, why there's limitations on it, and in particular, you know, kind of what would happen to Sonic if he ran at these sort of speeds. So, Dave, do you want to take us through some of that stuff? What would happen to Sonic if he hit these sort of speeds?
So I'm going to be stealing a lot from one of the writers at Sci-Fi, and I'll put the article up, did a great job of actually talking about Sonic's adaptations for speed. They did some rough calculations. I looked at a couple of them. They look fine. I didn't redo them in detail because I'm a lazy human being these days.
Nothing wrong with that. You've got things to do.
They discuss, I mean, the biggest issue is that Sonic's speed varies so drastically from movie to movie and video game to video game. And there are different versions.
Yeah.
And Sonic is classically one of those characters who it's always like, you know, Sonic got to his top speed, but to beat this bad guy, he's going to have to go even faster, which you can totally do in the world of video games.
The first three seasons of The Flash, the CW Flash, like, my name is Barry Allen and I'm the fastest man alive. And right. The first three seasons are just him trying to be faster than someone else who's clearly much faster. It's really annoying.
And it's always him getting to is like, I have got to my limit. And then it's like the next season, it's like, Barry, you're going to have to go even faster. Boom, boom, boom. So they kind of discuss that. So I'm not going to go into huge details about, you know, how fast does Sonic actually go. Instead, I'm just simply going to use one of the lock points that they used, which is Sonic is constantly seen both in the games, and my understanding is, and Sam, you'll have to support me, in the movie, breaking the sound barrier. Like, when he goes off, there's a Sonic boom.
I'm not sure if that happens in the movie, but he does do a lot of this kind of thing where he goes so fast that everyone else stands still, which is definitely breaking the sound barrier. They do the Quicksilver thing from Days of Future Past, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we don't have to focus too much on the numbers here, but the sound barrier is defined at 767 miles per hour. That's the speed of sound.
Which is about 1,000 kilometers an hour.
So we're not going to focus on the speed. We're just going to talk about consequences of speed. So I hate physics. It was my worst score on the MCAT. I will be the first one to say that this is starting to get out of my depth. But I can understand the basic calculations of mass, speed, acceleration. So Sam gets in his car, he puts his foot on the gas pedal, he starts going faster and faster and faster. Initially, Sam can feel forces acting upon his body. That's why you get sort of pulled back into your seat, because you're feeling the forces of acceleration working upon you. But once you've actually got up to speed and you're moving at speed, yourself, the car, everything in the car, they're now moving at a uniform speed, which is why you can move around in the vehicle. It's why when the rocket ship is initially taking off, and it's getting faster and faster and faster as it accelerates to break Earth's gravitational forces, astronauts are pushed back into the seat. Now, Sonic does 0 to 60, right? He's just...
Yeah.
That means that his body is having to experience all these forces of acceleration acting on him every time that he speeds up. The reason why we do so much acceleration training with astronauts is because as blood is started to push out of the brain, out of the extremities, it starts to be pushed backwards into areas of the body, you pass out. Initially, you lose the ability to see color because you've actually, the parts of your eyes that are responsible for color coordination require a lot more energy than the parts that see gray. You gray out.
Okay.
And then the brain's going to click off as a defense mechanism. So you're going to pass out. So Sonic's going to run along, he's going to accelerate, and then most likely he's going to pass out and just slam right into the ground.
Oh, just lose all of his skin in one go.
So let's say that he's got neurological adaptations. Let's say that somehow he's got valves that are built into his veins that are somehow resistant to this type of speed that allow him to hold that blood in his brain for longer periods of time. He's got a whole bunch of redundancies and backup. There really isn't any tissue that's designed to survive under that, especially your brain. But let's say somehow he's come up with a neurological adaptation. So he is able to get up to speed without passing out. So now he's faced with problem two, which is you're running at this type of speed. Your heart has to pump blood all over your body, right? And it's constantly pumping against the forces of gravity. So now you've added all these extra forces onto your poor heart that's pushing blood into areas that it shouldn't be. So he's most likely going to get into a situation where he's going to have a heart attack. So Sonic does manage to not pass out. He runs for another 4 feet, at which point he has a heart attack. He clutches his chest. He holds up his medical bracelet. And then he passes out in the dirt. So let's get over that. Let's say that Sonic has a really good heart. He's got awesome valves in both his veins and potentially in his arteries. He's put himself in the situation where he's just got the biggest heart. It fills most of his chest cavity when this bad boy goes off. Like, you can hear it beating from across the room.
He's just got a real small stomach. He's got the tiniest bladder ever, so he's going to make toilet pit stops all the time.
And his heart just looks like this thickened, muscular monster of a thing. It looks like Arnold. Ugh. So now he's running. His heart is beating. It's managing to move enough blood through his system. So now he's got to struggle with air. Because suddenly he's got all this air rapidly rushing in. So either he's going to have some system in place that he can actually accept all this air coming in at top speed and be able to deal with it okay, or it's going to completely shred his nostrils, pulmonary system, or more likely, he's just going to close his nose, close his mouth while he's running, which means that he's not going to take in any air during that period of time. He's going to have to hold his breath while his body is undergoing some seriously hardcore metabolic processes. So he's going to start running out of oxygen to conduct normal cellular activity and going to his normal backup process, which is something called anaerobic metabolism. He's not going to be able to do that very long. So now he's got this short window of time. His brain has somehow survived unconsciousness. His heart is pumping. He's holding his breath because he can't take the air that's coming in. And he sees something coming up, and so he stops at top speed. Concussions are a result of suddenly going from top speed to your brain stopping and slamming into the wall of your skull. So he's going to suffer through that. But then on top of that, he's going to suffer through that for every part of his body. His bones are going to break against the dirt when he comes to those instantaneous stops. And all of his tissue is going to keep moving. His skin is going to get pulled on. His muscles are going to get pulled on. His eyes would likely pop out of their sockets. He's just going to be in this like really bad position.
As always, a much less kid-friendly movie.
So let's say that he's somehow got really, really tight, awesome skin. He's reinforced his bones with material that I'm not aware of. He's got super protective eyelids so that basically he closes his eyes when he comes to the stop. Okay, maybe. So the biggest issue is neurological processing. When Sam or David is running along at top speed, they're being chased by something. I'm looking around the world to try and decide, where do I go next?
Yeah.
And so it's not just the speed of my brain, because the Flash loves to do this, where it talks about like, well, Barry thinks. He doesn't just move super fast. His brain actually thinks super fast.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Maybe he's got really, really good neural networks where everything's really, really quick. You have a speed that is associated with electricity moving from your brain to your muscles and coordinating an action. And there are limitations on how fast that can go. You can make changes like adding myelin sheaths or changing the neurons in such a way that you're reducing their space or creating better reflex arcs. But the reality of the matter is, at the speed that he's going to be moving, if he sees something come out of his path, so he's running around and suddenly like somebody opens a car door, perfect example, there's no way that he's going to be able to stop in time. But on top of that, there's no way he's actually going to see it before he hits it. His brain is not going to be able to get the information into his eyes, back to his brain, get a response that then goes down to his muscles to stop himself. So most likely he's not even going to see the car door.
Yeah, I mean, you think of bikes who hit car doors all the time. I had a friend who that happened to at the end of 2018. She didn't even remember it happening because she was just off the bike straight away. And that's right. A bike. Like Sonic's going at like 100 right. times that speed. I mean, he's probably going to kill whoever's getting out of the car, himself and maybe the other passengers in the car.
And I am a country kid. I used to ride dirt bikes and four-wheelers and things like that in the bush. And you have these moments where you're just booking along because you're a kid and you want to see how fast you can go. And it gets up to a point where everything's just kind of whizzing past you. And you have this moment where your tiny teenage brain kicks in and you're like, I'm going to die. Like if something jumps out right now, or if there's a tree, or even if there's a sharp rock in the pathway, like you're not processing the information. You're just trying to like keep track of like what's in front of you as quick as you can. And that's where we see so many accidents. So unfortunately, there are multiple ways that this isn't going to work. On top of which, and we'll get into these as we talk about physiological adaptations for speed, Sonic in no way, based on his shape and his appearance, is a creature that's going to be able to run very fast.
At one point, Sonic picks up a turtle and runs with it just to give the turtle the experience of speed. And there's like a close up on the turtle's face and it's like shaking because it's, you know, going at these ridiculous speeds. And then he puts it down and says, hey, little buddy, have a great day. Hope that was, you know, special for you. And runs off. And the turtle's just like shaking as it walks along. Like it's dead. It's going to die any second.
Yes, he's going to show up and all of the turtle is going to have sprayed over the back of the shell. And I totally believe that he could show up holding the shell if he could, in fact, hold on to the shell at all at the speeds that he's moving at. But he's going to put down the shell. He's going to think the turtle's inside it. He's going to be like, goodbye, little buddy. And he's going to take off. And like this empty shell is going to sit on the side of the road.
And there's another point where he pushes two people off a building to save their lives. Now, you know, he's just generating force from like one point in their body. Like he's just pushing them from the small of their back and they've gone flying forward. Like, at the speed he's moving, if he is able to generate this much, he's just snapping their spine.
Right. When Superman reaches up and, like, grabs a plane,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how strong he is. He's exerting one tiny little piece of force on the plane. That's why someone can stab you with a sword and the sword passes through you. You don't have to apply much force at a single point, which is why I loved The Boys when Homelander, when it's like, oh, yeah, why don't you just get out and, like, pick the plane up and drive it? And he's like, how? Like, if I touch it anywhere, I'm just going to go through it. Like, I can't, I can't do that.
And in the comics, there is an explanation for Superman being able to do that. The explanation is that he generates, like, a gravitational force around the object he's holding.
Yeah.
Which is real weird.
You got to go out there. Lift the plane up.
Lift the plane? How? There's nothing to stand on. It's fucking air.
I don't know. Fly at it. Ram it straight.
Come that kind of speed, either the plane goes ass over tit or I'll punch straight through the hull.
So let's just talk about a couple of species and cool speeds, because I think this is a nice little like aside.
So before we start looking at some different animals and their speed adaptations, if you've got any thoughts or questions, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at SamParentNTNU. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can visit our website, which is www.cinematicaanimalia.com, or email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. And if you want to read some of the more hardcore science stuff that Adam and I write about, you can check out ecologyforthemasses.com.
So we all know the cheetah, fastest land mammal on the planet. It has a clocked-in speed of somewhere between 68 to 75 miles per hour, or for
the civilized world,
110 and 120 kilometers per hour. The peregrine falcon, which is much faster than the cheetah, when it's diving, it's moving at speeds of around 389 kilometers per hour, or 242 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Now, those are fastest moving creatures. So if we're looking at speed simply from a basis of these animals running or flying and moving their entire body, those are pretty much the pinnacles that we get of speed. However, I went to a conference a couple of years ago and had a professor there who she specializes in physiological adaptations for speed. And she likes to bring up that there are way faster movements that are accomplished by animals in the animal kingdom than are seen by the cheetah and the peregrine falcon. So a perfect example of this is the trap jaw ant. Trap jaw ants have these big mandibles that they can ratchet open to around 180 degrees, and then they can lock them. And then they have these tiny little hairs that are in front of them that sort of act like a tripwire. So they're basically walking around with these giant bear traps on their face. When something gets close to them, those little tripwires, those hairs, activate and their jaws slam shut. And their jaws can slam shut at approximately 143 miles per hour, which is an action that they can do over and over and over again. Now, what's really cool is that when they get scared, so if something's chasing them and it's coming after them, They'll actually take their giant mandible, they point it at the ground, and then they activate it. Their mandible hits the ground, and it actually shoots them backwards. And it blasts them into an unknown location that gets them away from their predator that's chasing them. If you ever go to YouTube and search sort of slow motion versions of them, you see these little ants running along, and then they just like hit it, and then they just disappear. They're gone. The other example in the ant category that gets brought up a lot is the Saharan silver ant, which is one of the world's fastest insects. Now, on its own, it doesn't seem like it's moving that fast because it's moving basically 855 millimeters or 33 inches per second, which isn't a lot. But if you compare it to the ant's body size, it's managing about 108 times the insect's body length every second, as opposed to the cheetah's only doing 16 body lengths. So the ant is moving faster on a scale of just looking at that creature. If you were to max that out, the ant would be running at about 800 kilometers per hour if it was up to normal size.
If it was, the size of a dog, let's say. Yeah.
Normal mechanisms don't apply to insects. Insects can do a whole bunch of things that larger animals can't. But this is why speed gets so difficult whenever Sam's child approaches him and says, "What's the fastest animal on the planet?" There are a whole bunch of different answers that Sam can give.
Yeah.
Now, one of the fastest movements that's been recorded of an insect is termites. So again, we talked about termites last week. I love termites. Termites have this really cool adaptation where a predator comes into the nest, the warrior gets himself up. But the problem is that they don't have a lot of room to move. As we've talked about before, they've got these tiny little burrows. So if things come into the burrow, it's not like they can move around and do any sort of crazy ninja shit. They're in a position where, like, they've just got a predator. It's at the front. It's, you got to face it. You got to kill it. You got to do what you can. So what they're able to do is they flip themselves over onto their back, and they have their mandibles that are kind of latched up against each other. So they slide one jaw under the other, and then it's blindingly fast. The two jaws, actually, the mandibles, bounce across each other. It generates this huge amount of force. Like flicking your fingers off each other. It will toss the termite back into the nest, but it also flies the insect in front of them forward. It's so quick that it usually kills whatever is trying to get into the nest. And if it doesn't, the amount of trauma and damage that's done from this action that they fired off will actually usually kill the invading insect within a couple of steps. And the best example I could find was a paper that quoted it as the five-palm exploding heart technique that you get to see in Kill Bill, where, like, they've been hit and they just stumble away until eventually they fall down. And that's traveling at around 150 miles per hour that they can make that action work.
Another really good one while we're in this kind of this taxa is pistol shrimps.
Yeah, pistol shrimps. These shrimp, where one claw is huge and the other one is little, they look like they're walking along with like a little deformed claw. And they are hunting these species that once they get close to them, because they are ambush predators. So a fish gets close to them or some other species that they're hunting, they then snap this claw. And when it comes down, it's moving really, really quickly. And the idea isn't necessarily to strike the animal that they're after. They can, but the main part is that it moves down and it's moving at approximately 100 kilometers per hour. It releases this sound, which is approximately 280 decibels, which can make this popping. If you're at a water source that has these guys in it, you can actually put your head underwater and you can hear all these popping noises as these little guys are generating cavitation bubbles everywhere. Now, what this causes is it snaps, the water all moves out of the way. The pressure that's produced on this claw, it's strong enough to kill a small fish that's coming by. But then the water starts to move rapidly back into this space. So it produces this collapsing bubble. And as it collapses, the bubble actually reaches temperatures of around 5,000 degrees Kelvin, which is approximately the heat on the sun, which is just so cool. And it also produces a little bit of light, not enough that we can see. But you've got this species of shrimp that's sitting and clipping its claw enough to create these points of pressure that knock its prey out or just instantaneously kill its fish. And then when the bubble comes down and that generation of heat occurs, they can actually partially cook whatever they're after as well. So freaking cool.
They're amazing.
The last one I just want to quickly talk about, because they are potentially the fastest, which is jellyfish. Now, jellyfish have these little barbs, darts.
Nematocysts.
Yeah, that they can fire. Basically little microscopic harpoons full of venom. They've done a whole bunch of research that suggests that they can shoot these things out at approximately 5 million times the force of gravity. That's how quickly they're accelerating these little guys out.
They're like held in with pressure as well, right? Like there's a little cap keeping them in place and then it just
explodes fires out. Them off, yeah. Which is really, really cool.
Can we help you? Want to take you back to the house?
Well, there's really only one thing you can do.
What? What is it?
You're gonna have to pee on it.
So those are just some fast creatures. The whole point of everything that Sam and Adam and I talk about every week is to try and make these creatures work. So I wanted to talk about things that make the two species that we started this discussion, the peregrine falcon and the cheetah, work, right? Because they have to be different than us. In order that they can achieve those kinds of speeds, they have to be different than other animals, and they've got to have adaptations to do the things that we talked about, like surviving extreme pressures, not blacking out, being able to see things.
Just to be clear, Dave is going to explain why they are able to reach these speeds.
Right.
We don't think that the peregrine falcon is a mythical creature. We're not trying to make it work in that sense. We're perfectly aware that they exist.
Yeah.
We just want to explain how they can reach those speeds.
Yeah, and a couple of things that Sonic might take in.
Yeah.
Let's just start with peregrine falcons, because they're awesome. They are very aerodynamic. That's the first thing, and it's a point working against Sonic. Is Sonic has this giant head, and he's got that weird body, and his limbs are kind of sticking out.
He looks like he's going to go top-heavy at any second.
He looks like he's going to break his neck the minute he accelerates, that his head is going to stay in place while the rest of his body tries to move. So peregrine falcons, they actually, when they're into that position, that dive, they collapse all their body in, they stick their wings as close to them as they possibly can, and they create this very bullet-looking shape when they're falling. They also have specialized nostrils. So we talked about before that when you're taking air in, it'll just destroy all the material that's behind your nose. If it's moving in at top speed, it's going to really, really hurt. So they actually have these modifications in their turbinates or their nostrils that break up the air as it's coming in and allow for the flow to be broken up. So it's actually slow enough that they're able to take in some oxygen and breathe while they're falling. And then the last sort of cool adaptation is they actually have a membrane, something called a nictitating membrane, that they drop over top of their eye that they can still see through, but it's basically protecting the cornea and the rest of their ocular structures. And then they have backup glands, which are just producing a shit ton of tears to cover and protect everything from further damage.
Car windshield.
Yeah, basically. But it's a car windshield that they're constantly covering in wiper fluid just to try and like protect and keep everything from drying out, because that's the other big problem, right? You don't want your eyes to dry out.
It's basically, you know, if you've ever driven across a desert road and you're driving at that speed, you're getting insects in your windshield, getting dirt on your windshield. Imagine the windshields are your eyes and you're in pain every time something hits it.
Now, that's a species falling at speed. So talking about the cheetah, which is actually something achieving these types of velocities. So cheetahs have a bunch of adaptations to try and move at the speed they do. One, they've got something called fast twitch muscle fibers. So I'm not going to go into the detail because I think we've talked about this before, but you've got slow twitch and fast twitch, which are endurance versus rapid activity muscles. Fast twitch muscle fibers are fantastic. They allow you to do really cool stuff. They don't work for that long. Cheetahs also have a tail for balance, which I did not know until I was reading up on them, that if you slow down when they're running, you can actually see the tail moves itself back and forth, which is why it's so long, to act as a rudder to try and counterbalance them, as well as allow them to make those super fast movements. They've got one of the world's most flexible spines, which I've always wondered about, because you see like a cheetah almost bends in half while it's running at these speeds to try and catch up with a gazelle. And I've always been like, how? And it also explains why I can take my house cat and I can like fold him up into a small ball and stick him somewhere, because they've got these really cool adaptations. They have enlarged nostrils for intake. They've got an enormous liver just for dealing with the lactic acid that they build up. They also have an enlarged heart and lungs for exactly the reason that we were talking about. And they have amazing adaptations that allow them to go from approximately 60 breaths per minute to up to 150 breaths per minute while they're running. And then the last thing, which again works against Sonic, is they've got a super lightweight body and a small head. I'd never noticed this before, but looking at cheetahs, they have a tiny little head. They do have extra modifications on their eyes, like the peregrine falcon does, to protect them at speed. They also have those incredibly long legs, and they run on all fours. And the last is they have these blunt claws that they can step into the ground to try and slow them down whenever they're coming up at top speed. Now, the two things that both the Peregrine Falcon and the Cheetah have in common, which I think is important to note. They can't do this for very long. The Peregrine Falcon dives very, very quickly and then comes out of these dives to catch its prey. The Cheetah actually cannot run for more than a couple of minutes, because if it does, they'll actually overheat. Their respiratory rate will become so rapid and they can die. I think it's 400 to 500 meters is approximately like the max that the cheetah can do before it's out. That's why the gazelle is oftentimes able to beat them out.
Yeah, you just have to last long enough for the cheetah to, well, yeah, run out of energy.
Before it gets tired and it's like, ah, fuck, I can't keep this up. Which is why cheetahs sneak up on their prey.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just booking it out of the Sahara at top speed, like, I'm gonna get you. They have to get close enough that they can then use their adaptation.
And cheetahs are really unlucky bastards because, I mean, that all comes at a price. Like, they're not built for, I want to find a better word, but I'm just going to say they're not built for combat. Almost any other predator in their ecosystem will be able to kill, like, two or three of them in one go.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do it, but when it comes to the big cats, the cheetah's probably the only one you could win a fight with.
Their bones are not particularly strong. They have lightweight bodies, so they don't take much to be thrown around. They don't have a lot of endurance muscle fibers for big, long fights.
They don't have the jaw strength that a lot of other big cats have.
And they've got the blunted claws for when they're trying to slow down and stop, right? Where they want to skid or slide. Apparently, cheetah cubs in predatory fights with other, like, bigger predators that are coming after them have a very high mortality rate.
And they get their kills stolen all the time. Because, I mean, you know, you take something down, but if there's a bigger predator nearby, they're just going to come along and be like, well, you can't defend this, so it's mine.
When I saw these dudes come in, I told them the truth. Don't you eat any of my food!
So if Sonic wanted to move at speed, he's going to have to do a whole bunch of things that are going to make him less Sonic. And I feel like we're going through the King Kong episode all again.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun though, because for someone to develop hyper speed, they either have to be escaping from something, or they have to, you know, be chasing something down. Now, you know, Sonic's got those real big forward-facing eyes, so maybe Sonic's a predator.
So his large head is gone. He's going to have lightweight bones. He's going to have to run on all four limbs.
What about the rolling? The classic Sonic-like rolling. Can he do that?
If he came to a sudden stop, he would probably roll while he was destroying himself.
Break every bone in his body, yeah.
You'd see this thing rolling by and you'd be like, ah, oh, classic Sonic. And he'd be like screaming like, take me to an emergency room.
Horrible mix of just broken bones and stripped flesh.
Now, I feel like this is the point that's going to annoy people the most. Gone are his shoes. He's going to have to be able to actually grip the ground as he moves. Cheetah's paws are specialized to take this type of speed and contact so that they can, like, skid when they have to make those quick turns. He's going to need a tail, probably.
Yeah.
He's not going to be able to have those big frills coming off his head that are just going to be an aerodynamic nightmare. He's going to have a huge nose. He's going to have giant nostrils. He can't have the cute little hedgehog nose. He's going to have like a... I'm trying to think of an animal.
Like a horse nose.
He's going to have these big nostrils. His eyes are going to have special adaptations. So he's going to have some form of either membrane that comes down or extra tear glands. He's not going to be able to run for very long. So Robotnik is not going to have to chase him very far before Sonic just kind of runs out of speed and collapses somewhere. He's going to have fast twitch muscle fibers that are going to allow him to do these things. He's going to have a giant liver, giant heart, enhanced lungs. And then the last one, and I don't have a good mechanism for getting around it, because I couldn't find how he would beat this in either the Peregrine Falcon or the Cheetah. He's going to have some fucking intense concussion protection. I imagine that most of that giant head is going to be fluid. There's going to be a very small brain in the center of it, or just really thick meninges to try and protect himself from these situations.
Yeah.
He's going to have the helmet inside his head, basically.
We were talking about this beforehand. This is a thing that comes up a lot in films. So, for instance, one of the classic examples is Iron Man in the first Avengers, when he gets thrown out of that tower by Loki just before he hits the ground. His suit rushes down and he stops. Like, he just goes from whatever speed he's falling at to nothing, basically.
Complete stop.
Everything inside that suit is just going to be mush. Like, he's going to pass out. He's dead, essentially. Like, you cannot just do that.
Yeah. No, you have to slow.
So every time Sonic needs to slow down to that pace, which he does on multiple occasions, there's no way he can survive that.
I had a great idea, Tony, but my suit is more advanced in every way.
How'd you solve the icing problem?
Icing problem?
Might want to look into it.
Those are our physiological adaptations that Sonic could try to use. I don't know how many of them he'd pick up, and I don't know whether or not I'd watch that movie.
No, be horrifying, as always. But yeah, that's it for this week. What does Adam say every week? The monsters aren't real, but the science is. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
I'm Sonic, a little ball of super energy in an extremely handsome package. On my planet, people were always after my powers. So I came to yours.
Whatever this creature is, I'm going to uncover the source of its power.
Yeah, hey, this is my power. And I'm using it to protect my friends.
Sonic the Hedgehog.